Let's get down to business, taking a look at Wall Street. Dow Jones Industrial Average down 42 at 18,037. The S&P 500 Index down 8 at 2,108. NASDAQ Composite down 31 at 5,060. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note up 1 basis point at 1.92%. Oil down 16 cents at $56.99 per barrel. Gold up $21.30 at $1,201.70 per ounce. Silver up 65 cents at $16.50. We'll get to the economic news in a minute, but the big market news today is Apple. Net income in the quarter that ended in March, $13.6 billion, or $2.33 per share, representing a 33% jump in profit from last quarter. Analysts on average had forecast second quarter profit of $12.6 billion, or $2.16 per share. Revenue rose 27% to $58 billion, beating analyst estimates of $56 billion. iPhone sales in Greater China outpaced those in the U.S. for the first time. Total revenue from Greater China up 71% to $16.8 billion. iPhone unit sales up 40% to 61.2 million. That topped analyst average prediction for 58.1 million. Apple forecasts the momentum will continue in the third quarter, with revenue projected to rise to $46 billion to $48 billion range from $37 billion a year ago. Apple has some $193 billion in cash, with a capital return program which now totals $200 billion. Apple will increase its share buyback authorization by $50 billion to $140 billion and increase the company's dividend by 11% to 52 cents from 47 cents. So, to recap, Apple posted better-than-expected sales and profit. They will increase their buybacks and dividends, and they upgraded their third-quarter guidance. Basically, they did everything except wash your car for you. The Federal Reserve FOMC is meeting this week. It's a pretty safe bet that policymakers will not be raising interest rates at the meeting, but investors will still be watching the language of the statement for signs on when such a rate hike might be expected. This is a delicate dance by the Fed. They want to test the waters without getting a single toe wet. They might try to indicate they're in favor of a rate hike in order to get a read on market reaction. Also on tap for Wednesday is the preliminary first quarter readout of GDP, along with some early April economic reports. The spotlight in Asia this week falls on Japan, where a central bank decision could provide clarity on the direction of the world's third largest economy. Following its meeting, the Bank of Japan is expected to cut its 2015 inflation forecast by several tenths of a percentage point from 1% and shave its growth forecast from the current 2.1%. Despite inflation dropping back to zero, Governor Haruhiko Kuroda has argued strongly that the BOJ's existing quantitative easing program is on track. Meanwhile, Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe visits Washington as the U.S. and Japan prepare to sign an expanded defense accord and finalize a major trade pact. On Wednesday, he will be the first Japanese leader since World War II to address a joint session of Congress. As the monetary easing by central banks across the globe keeps yields at rock bottom, investment officers predict that Japanese demand for U.S. debt won't ease in the months ahead, given the lack of alternatives. Japanese life insurers, some of the world's largest institutional investors, plan to keep pouring money into U.S. debt this year, outlining that Japan even overtook China in the first quarter as the largest foreign holder of U.S. treasuries. While the current 2% yield on the U.S. 10-year is a far cry from yields of 5% or more before the financial crisis, It's still miles apart from the 0.16% yield on German bonds and the 0.29% yield on the 10-year Japanese equivalent. The finance ministers of Slovenia and Germany on Saturday acknowledged for the first time that they are considering plans on what to do if a Greek deal is not reached by the end of June, breaking their long-held stance of insisting that the country must stay in the Eurozone. The issue of a Plan B was raised during Friday's Eurogroup meeting in Riga, Latvia, where Athens was strongly criticized for delaying the list of reforms needed to unlock its next round of funding. A Eurogroup meeting in Riga on Friday descended into name-calling as the currency bloc's finance ministers hurled abuse at Greek finance minister Yanis Varoufakis, accusing him of being a time waster, a gambler, an amateur. The Eurogroup finance ministers don't have any intention of negotiating. For them, it's simple. Greece needs to collect more taxes and crush the workers. For the Greek negotiators, it's fairly simple as well. The workers are already crushed and the country has no money. Varoufakis has been pulled from day-to-day negotiations. He'll still be involved, but from the sidelines. Varoufakis tweeted, FDR, 1936, they are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred. A quotation close to my heart in reality these days. Greece's economy is about 2% of Eurozone economy, and a hard-line stance from the Euro Union finance ministers would not overwhelm Europe's economy. Most of the money Greece owes is now owed to governments or the central bank, not to private banks, insurance companies, or hedge funds. Private interests have long since left Athens. The exception is the vulture hedge funds that bought Greek debt for pennies on the dollar, with the idea of dragging the Greeks through the courts to enforce collection. So as the finance ministers of Slovenia and Germany work on a Plan B, I just hope they realize that Plan B really means a return to nationalism in the Eurozone, which has a poor history in that area. The game of chicken between Greece and its international creditors is turning into a vicious blame game as Athens lurches closer to bankruptcy with no cash for reform agreement in sight. Europe's political leaders and central bankers and Greek politicians agree on only one thing. If Greece goes down, they don't want their fingerprints on the murder weapon. Financial firm Markit says it's a flash or preliminary reading of its purchasing managers' index for the services sector slipped to 57.8 in April, that from a final reading of 59.2 in March, which had been the highest level since August. A reading over 50 signals expansion in economic activity. Chipotle Mexican Grill has eliminated genetically modified organisms from all its ingredients, an unprecedented move for a national U.S. restaurant chain. The company, which began labeling its GMO ingredients 2 years ago and vowed to remove them, has now taken the final step of stripping them from tortillas and cooking oil. The move coincides with a new Chipotle marketing campaign that will tout its use of simple, unprocessed ingredients. Meanwhile, Coca-Cola announced it doesn't have any plans to change the sweetener for Diet Coke away from aspartame, despite other beverage sellers shifting their focus to the use of natural sweeteners. Sales of Diet Coke fell 6% year over year in the first quarter. On last week's earnings call, Coca-Cola executives said finding the right path to grow Diet Coke sales was still a work in progress. Corinthian Colleges is closing all of its schools. The school is closing its 28 for-profit schools, meaning approximately 16,000 students will have to finish their degrees elsewhere. The Department of Education will help the stranded students review their options, including possibly forgiving some of their loans. In recent years, Corinthian has been accused by multiple federal and state authorities of systematically lying about its graduation or job placement rates, misleading potential students into enrolling, and forking over tens of thousands of dollars to obtain credentials many critics believe to be of dubious value. The company annually receives some $1.4 billion in federal financial aid for its students. A group of roughly 100 former Corinthian students that calls itself the Corinthian 100 has been publicly pressuring the Department of Education to cancel all debts owed by current and former Corinthian students because of the company's alleged deception related to its job placement and graduation rates. Police officers in riot gear clashed with rock-throwing protest in Baltimore today after the funeral for 25-year-old Freddie Gray, the latest victim of police brutality. Gray died a week after his spine was somehow partially severed in police custody. He was initially stopped because he fled upon noticing officers, who later found a knife clipped to his pocket. Cell phone video shows police dragging Gray into a van, but when officers took him out, he wasn't breathing, and he died 1 week later. His funeral was today, further sparking the citywide demonstrations. At least seven officers were injured in today's protest, and one was unresponsive, according to the Baltimore Police Department. The violence broke out near the church where Gray was eulogized. Groups of angry young people surrounded a police cruiser and smashed it in. Another cruiser could be seen burning. A drugstore was also looted. Other protesters pelted the police with items picked up at nearby vacant lots. Rocks, bricks, boards, and chunks of concrete. Some arrests were made. The unrest comes after a weekend during which an angry mob protesting outside Oriole Park at Camden Yards forced the team to close the baseball stadium to keep people inside safe from the violence outside. Fears over the potential for crowds to become violent forced the closure earlier today of several downtown businesses and offices. So, we started today's review with a story about Apple, earning almost $1 billion per week in profit in the first quarter. We finish with a story about violent protest in Baltimore. And that's where we are today. Somewhere between two extremes. We invite you to follow along at moneyradio.com, live streaming and archived audio. The daily blog is eatthebankers.com. You can find text and audio at eatthebankers.com. And be sure to sign up for the podcast. You can also get that at iTunes. The podcast is free. Just subscribe, and then it's on your cell phone. You can take us with you wherever you take your little cell phone. EatTheBankers.com.